This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. It's 10 minutes of 5 on a Friday. That means we're discussing the week in politics. Here, as usual, is Rob Schofield with NC Policy Watch, part of the Progressive North Carolina Justice Center. And sitting in for Becky Gray is Rick Henderson, editor-in-chief at the Carolina Journal, an arm of the conservative John Locke Foundation. Hi, guys.
Hey, Jeff. Hi there.
Judicial reform plodded along this week. Changes to the state judiciary have yet to take shape, and this process is likely to last months. Lawmakers were given a presentation about judicial selection on Wednesday. Right now, voters choose judges. That could be altered, potentially, through a constitutional referendum. Many legal advocates and lawyers have called for changes to the system for decades. Rob, are we any closer to some sort of consensus on this?
I don't think we're a whole lot closer. I'm glad that they've finally gotten about the business of taking public testimony and doing something other than just having closed door, you know, backroom sessions to discuss the issue. But this fundamental question of whether we're going to actually move North Carolina away from electing judges, that's a pretty doggone big deal. And there are experts on both sides of the political spectrum who think that might make some sense. And I can actually conceive of a way that it might make some sense. But if it's only – the idea is to get us away from politics in electing judges. And if the whole idea is simply to move us to a system where, say, the legislature appoints the judges, that's not going to get us away from politics. So there's a lot of work yet to be done. I don't have a whole lot of faith in this General Assembly to really pull it off, but hope springs eternal.
I think one of the issues, and as Rob says, it's good that they're finally getting down to this, because the system that we have right now has had its issues, and it's been changed by policy over the years, from partisan elections to nonpartisan elections back to partisan elections. And it looks to me as if the sort of plan that seems to be coalescing in the Senate, which is really driving this right now, may be something toward a process that has the initial system of elections of judges and then some sort of confirmation process or retention election afterward. That's all going to require a constitutional amendment. You can't do that statutorily.
Right.
But I think that would be a preferable system to one that puts everything in the hands of appointment through, even if it's executive branch appointment with legislative confirmation, because if one party controls everything, whichever party it is, then you have further politicized the bench and you have also taken the people out of the process entirely. North Carolinians love to elect people. We elect 11 Council of State officers. I think that's too many, personally, but we love to have elections. And I think that having the voice of the people involved at least in one phase of the process, if not multiple phases of the process, so long as it's not every 2 years, is something that's worth looking at, but it will take a constitutional amendment to make that happen.
Meanwhile, as tax negotiations on Capitol Hill continue, a piece in the Washington Post explored whether North Carolina's recent tax reforms, cuts, reductions serve as a forecast for what might happen nationally. Rick, the federal bill is far more complex than the tax changes here. Linking local and federal on this one, a good comparison or an oversimplification?
Oversimplification, but there are some lessons to be learned. The problem with comparing local and federal taxes is that the state government has to balance its budget. The state government also has certain constitutional requirements to provide basic public services, especially public education. And the federal government also imposes all sorts of mandated programs, such as Medicaid. And so the federal government doesn't have many of these sorts of limits confining what it can do in tax policy. It can simply write a blank check, charge it to our future generations. And so there are some comparisons that are apt in that reducing corporate tax rates and flattening taxes and making them more simple and making compliance an easier process and removing a lot of the bureaucratic impediments to developing businesses and things like that, those are good. But there are the differences in the whole fiscal outlook between a state that has to balance its budget and a federal government that does not makes a lot of these comparisons somewhat inapt. And also, the federal system under both House and Senate plans, you're not talking about reducing the rates to one. You're talking about 3 or 7. And if they stick at 7 tax rates for individual taxes, that's really not much tax reform.
Wow. I think what the Republicans are saying is, look at North Carolina. This is a success story. We slashed taxes and things are going great. And I think the reality is quite the opposite. North Carolina Our economy has been growing in some parts of the state, just like lots of other parts, urban parts of the country. We've sort of been riding that same wave that's been going across the country for the last several years. But the truth of the matter is that North Carolina is a more divided state, a state of haves and have-nots, even more than ever before in recent years. And that's in large part a byproduct of these tax and spending policies in North Carolina that have cut taxes on the rich, cut services and structures that serve people and bolster the middle class. And that's exactly the same model, tragically, I would say, that's being embraced at the national level, even to a greater extent. And so I very much fear for our country. I fear that if this tax plan does in fact go through, that it will wreck the Affordable Care Act, that millions will lose their health insurance, and that the wealthy will get even wealthier, and that the middle class and the poor will fall even further behind.
Finally, we are barreling toward an unprecedented moment in American political history. Roy Moore could win a seat to the U.S. Senate this coming Tuesday. The candidate from Alabama stands accused of sexual misconduct by 9 women. Republican Speaker of the U.S. House Paul Ryan has repeatedly said Moore should drop out of the race. Republican Mitt Romney tweeted Monday, "Roy Moore in the U.S. Senate would be a stain on the GOP and on the nation. Lee Korfman and other victims are courageous heroes. No vote, no majority is worth losing our honor, our integrity." And Republican David Brooks concluded his column this week with, "The rot afflicting the GOP is comprehensive, moral, intellectual, political, and reputational. More and more former Republicans wake up every day and realize, I'm homeless, I'm politically homeless." Rick, are you politically homeless?
It's getting tough. And I'm someone who is a more libertarian Republican than a culturally conservative Republican. I think the issue with Roy Moore is one that Alabama's. It shocked me that Moore actually won the primary because long before any of these allegations came out, Roy Moore's moment in the sun was his abuse of the Ten Commandments in public buildings. And when I saw that he was running for Senate, I said, "Him again?" You know, the people who don't follow national politics probably never heard of the guy before.
If you were a registered voter in Alabama, would you vote for Roy Moore?
I would not vote.
Would not vote at all?
No, I would not vote.
Rob, any?
Well, I mean, it's striking that this whole debate over sexual harassment and sexual misconduct, obviously, it's been going on for a long time, but it's really come to a crescendo in recent years as a result of the man in the White House. The man in the White House clearly is a sexual abuser, a man who is morally bankrupt. And he is the head of the party that is now putting its oomph behind another sexual predator in Alabama. It's a remarkable, disturbing, tragic moment in American history. We're in a new day in American history, I hope, in which this kind of behavior will simply be something of the past, or at least you simply can't survive in politics with these kinds of allegations against you, such credible allegations. Unfortunately, Donald Trump and Roy Moore provide powerful evidence that maybe you can survive, and it's going to be a long, hard slog.
Rick Henderson is editor-in-chief with the Carolina Journal. Rob Schofield writes for NC Policy Watch. Thank you both.
Thanks, Jeff.